My left leg hurt a little, a puncture wound and a bruise right where the dart had hit. The blood on my pants had dried. There wasn't much of it. I tested the strength of the cuffs around my wrists and my ankles. Unbreakable. I bucked and jerked against them for half a minute, not trying to get free, just checking whether I would pass out again from the effort, and aiming to attract attention from whoever was watching through the surveillance camera and listening through the microphones. I didn't pass out again. My head ached a little as it cleared, and the exertion didn't make my leg throb any less. But apart from those minor symptoms, I felt pretty good. The attention I attracted was delayed well over a minute and took the form of a guy I had never seen before, walking in with a hypodermic syringe, some kind of a medical technician. He had a wet cotton ball in his other hand, ready to swab my elbow. He stopped outside my cage and looked in at me through the bars. I asked him, "Is that a lethal dose?" The guy said, "No." "Are you authorized to give a lethal dose?" "No." "Then you better back off, because however many times you shoot me up, I'm always going to wake up later. And one of those times, I'm going to come and get you. Either I'll make you eat that thing, or I'll stick it up your ass and inject you from the inside." "It's a painkiller," the guy said. "An analgesic for your leg." "My leg is fine." "Are you sure?" "Just back off." So he did. He went out through a stout wooden door, painted the same white as the walls. The door looked old. It was vaguely Gothic in shape. I had seen similar doors in old public buildings, city schools, and police stations. I dropped my head back to the cot. I had no pillow. I stared up through the bars at the ceiling and prepared to settle in. But less than a minute later, two of the men I knew came in through the wooden door. Two of the federal agents. The two sidekicks, not the leader. One of them had a Franke 12 with him. It looked loaded and cocked and ready. The other guy had some kind of a tool in his hand and a bunch of thin chains looped over his arm. The guy with the shotgun stepped up close to my bars and poked the barrel through and jammed the muzzle into my throat and kept it there. The guy with the chains unlocked my gate. Not with a key, but by spinning a dial, left and right. A combination lock. He opened the gate and came inside and stopped beside my cot. The tool in his hand was like a pair of pliers, but with blades instead of milled grips. Some kind of a cutter. He saw me looking at it and smiled. He leaned forward above my waist. The shotgun muzzle pressed harder into my throat. A wise precaution. Even with my hands strapped down, I could have folded forward from the waist and delivered a pretty good headbutt. Not my best, maybe, but with plenty of snap from the neck, I could have put the guy to sleep for longer than I had been at. Longer than the silverback, perhaps. I already had a headache. Another big impact wouldn't have made it much worse. But the funky muzzle stayed firmly in place, and I was reduced to the status of a spectator. The guy with the chains untangled them and laid them in place, like a trial run. One would cuff my wrists to my waist, one would chain my ankles, and the third would connect the first two together. Standard issue prison restraints. I would be able to shuffle along a foot at a time and lift my hands as far as my hips, but that was all. The guy got the chains all locked and fastened and tested, and then he used the tool to cut off the plastic cuffs. He backed out of the cage and left the gate open, and his partner pulled the Franke away. I guessed I was supposed to slide off the cot and stand up. So I stayed where I was. You have to ration your opponent's victories. You have to meet them out slowly and meanly. You have to make your opponents subliminally grateful for every little bit of compliance. That way, maybe you get away with giving up 10 small losses a day, rather than 10 big ones. But the two feds had had the same training I'd had. That was clear. They didn't stand there getting all beaten and frustrated. They just walked away, and the guy who had fitted the chains called back from the door and said, "Coffee and muffins through here. Any old time you want them." Which put the onus right back on me, exactly like it was designed to. Not stylish to wait an hour and then hobble through and wolf stuff down like I was desperate. That would be getting beat in public by my own hunger and thirst. Not stylish at all. So I waited just a token interval, and then I slid off the cot and shuffled out of the cage. The wooden door led to a room about the same size and shape as the one the cages were in. Same construction, same color paint, no window. There was a large wooden table in the center of the floor, three chairs on the far side, full of the three feds, one chair on my side, empty, waiting for me. On the table, all lined up neatly, was the stuff from my pockets. My roll of cash, flattened out and trapped under a sprinkling of coins, my old passport, my ATM card, my toothbrush, the Metro card I had bought for use on the subway, Theresa Lee's NYPD business card that she had given to me in the white-tiled room under Grand Central Terminal, the phony business card that Lila Hoth's local crew had given to me on the corner of 8th Avenue and 35th Street, the computer memory I had bought at Radio Shack with its loud pink neoprene sleeve, plus Leonid's clamshell cell phone. 9 separate items, each one of them stark and lonely under the bright bulbs on the ceiling. To the left of the table was another door. Same Gothic shape, same wooden construction, same new paint. I guessed it led onward to another room, the third of three in an L-shaped chain, or the first of three, depending on your point of view, depending on whether you were a captive or a captor. To the right of the table was a low chest of drawers that looked like it belonged in a bedroom. On it were a pile of napkins and a tube of nested foam cups and a steel vacuum bottle and a paper plate with 2 blueberry muffins. I shuffled over in my socks and poured a cup of coffee from the bottle. The operation was easier than it might have been because the chest was low. My chained hands didn't hamper me much. I carried the cup low and two-handed to the table, sat down in the vacant chair, dipped my head and sipped from the cup. The action made me look like I was yielding, like it was designed to, or bowing, or deferring. The coffee was pretty bad, too, and only lukewarm.